Hi, everyone. It's Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. And here's one I think you'll enjoy. It's called On Hard Times and Waiting for Santa, a whimsical entreaty from Kevin Annett. Well, some years ago, over a glass of his favorite bourbon, my dad reminded me why, as a youngster, I kept believing in Santa Claus. In these struggling days when our campaign's fiscal gas tank is nearing empty, I think it's especially an appropriate yarn. It was a week before Christmas in the year 1963. JFK had just been whacked, although the event made little impression on my seven-year-old mind, except when one of my grade two colleagues was sent to stand in the hallway when he responded to the teacher's query, "What begins with O?" with a cheeky, "Oswald." On the Anna household front, my mother was engaged in her usual pre-Yuletide shopping hysteria, goaded on by my dad's tendency to display a general indifference to buying a lot of shit, caused by the fact that he was usually broke. To make Planet Annett even more interesting, one cold Winnipeg morning, I apparently raced into the house in a state of angst after I'd chatted with our neighbor's kid, Andrea Ginsburg. With your standard Jewish chutzpah, Andrea had informed me with the certainty of one of the chosen people that, "No, Kevin, you schmuck, there really is no Santa Claus. It's your parents who give you all those gifts." As was my wont, I immediately went to my older brother Bill for clarity and solace. Well, ever the born operator, Bill's just retired from the corporate world with loads of ill-gotten lucre, he replied without batting an eye, "Aw, come on, Kev. Of course it's Santa who gives us presents. You know Dad could never afford to buy all that stuff." Well, that made perfect sense to me, of course. And so I kept the faith for another few years. Well, belief in a savior, whether he's bestowed with a beard and a sack of goodies or not, is an occupational illness of people under fire. Once we get clobbered enough and the waves of oblivion lap over us, we naturally look to something or someone else who will pull us out before we go under for the third time. Or a bit further down the maturation road, we learn to find a way out for ourselves. Well, there is, of course, a third option. We can help each other out of the turbulence. In an atomized and narcissistic culture like ours, the latter choice is easier said than done. Regardless of their politics or spirituality, North Americans don't think in terms of we, but rather me. For instance, just this past week, a supporter of our Republic of Canada demanded why I hadn't shown up in her community and given the common law workshop that I'd promised to do. "Because I'm broke," I answered. "Well, then just meditate and manifest the money," she snapped glibly. "Well, how about you folks just help raise the funds for my travel?" I responded. The woman said nothing. My lifelong tendency to never ask for help and to refuse payment for doing what's right certainly hasn't helped me stay afloat materially. I've never copyrighted anything I write or produce, and I routinely give away my books and even my paltry funds to those who need them. Most people enable that tendency in me by assuming that Kev will do it. He can do anything. He brought down the Pope. He's our hero. Well, folks, the arrangement is far from realistic. Facts are stubborn things, and the fact is that the enormous freedom movement I've helped to create is falling far short of its goals because of a lack of sustaining income. Our work lives completely hand-to-mouth, the way I do. But now with 2020 approaching and new campaigns being planned on many fronts, very exciting campaigns, we need to raise a minimal operating fund if our common law republic and child protection movement is to find wings again. The targeted amount of that fund is $50,000. With those funds, here's what we'll do. We'll commence a documentary film project that details on the ground the ongoing genocide in Canada as a sequel to award-winning film Unrepentant. Also, we'll continue the work of the West Coast Tribunal into Canadian war crimes, which has documented and linked the Trudeau government with Chinese organ and child traffickers. We'll commence a cross-continent organizing tour by me in the new year to build common law people's assemblies in more than two dozen communities. We'll continue to help establish the Republic of Canada in local Canadian communities, and we'll train Republic sheriffs to arrest and bring to trial, to common law trial, the traffickers and killers of children. Well, whether any of that happens depends on you. I've been under a total blacklisting for over 2 decades. Our successes have been thanks to the support from people like you. Your consistent financial backing is now all the more crucial. Online fundraising systems that we've relied on, like Patreon and GoFundMe, have continued denied access to the pledges made to our movement, and then they fog their fraudulent criminality. We just can't access the funds. The sabotaging hand of the corporate state reaches far. So, here's how all of you can help Kev keep believing in Santa Claus. First of all, send us a check, or a bunch of them, post-dated. Make them out to William Annett. Yep, that's my dad. And mail them to him at 1823 Ridgewood Avenue, apartment 207, Holly Hill, Florida, USA, 32117. That's William Annett, A-N-N-E-T-T, at 1823 Ridgewood Avenue, apartment 207, Holly Hill, Florida, 32117. If you're lazy, you can send your donations to us through PayPal to the email pickwick88@yahoo.com. You can find that listed under donations at murderbydecree.com. And if you really love me and want to arrange a bigger donation, contact me directly at thecommonland@gmail.com or hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com. And we can arrange a direct bank wire transfer, or we can arrange to have the cash dropped off in the middle of the night in a musty garage somewhere. And by the way, any one of you who pledges $100 or more to our movement will receive a signed copy of any two of my books found at Amazon.com or listed in my emails. Plus, you get a free dinner at the Bonanza All-You-Can-Eat restaurant in Winnipeg. Okay. I was just kidding about that last bit. I trust in the power of truth and in the goodwill of all of you. But I have to admit that some part of me is holding out for a really big Santa Claus this year to come through. Like the guy from Texas who every month or so assures me that once the global financial reset happens, he's sending our work a cool $150,000. Of course, he started promising me that nearly 8 years ago. So as with the second coming, I ain't holding my breath. And so, dear Santa, in your many ordinary guises, help us save lives and recover our liberties. Pledge what you can consistently and make possible our goal of $50,000. So with my thanks and Yuletide cheer, this is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice, murderbydecree.com. And as a P.S., just for the record, I don't hold any childhood grudge against my dad for being broke back then. But his bad jokes still bug me. Bye for now.
And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. It's August 4th. You gotta love Hazel Dickens. That's the singer. They'll never keep us down as long as we're united, brothers and sisters. We know our real history. We know where we're going. And today on the show, I've got two brilliant guests, Brenda Everall and Amy Wolf. One from Ontario, one from the West Coast. Women warriors, if to put it mildly. Brenda today is the second person in Canada to announce her candidacy for the Republic of Canada, the Republican Party of Canada. She's going to be running in Bay of Quinte riding, which is on the northern shore of Lake Ontario, around Picton, Ontario, King Edward County. And any folks in that area, be sure to support Brenda's campaign. She's going to be talking with us in the first part of the show. These postings of everything we're doing can be found at murderbydecree.com. Go to the section at the top entitled ITCCS Updates. You'll see a number of important postings that are recently, including one just up called Now Is Our Time. It's an appeal to folks, something very basic. That is, we need to fund this campaign. We're a people-fueled movement. We can only bring about a republic and freedom in Canada if you folks fund it. We need to raise $10,000 immediately for everybody's campaign expenses. There's a third person who's going to announce her candidacy in Alberta. As folks probably know by now, on July 23rd, I announced my candidacy in the riding of North Winnipeg, where my ancestors came in the 1830s. And so read that posting. It tells you how you can contribute financially, and also, more, even more importantly, as importantly, how you can get involved in this campaign to make Canada anew again. And our second guest is going to be talking about the need to bring out the real history of genocide in Canada. It's fine for Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister, to make a comment about it while genocide happened as part of his own re-election campaign. to appear politically correct, but I got news for you, Justin. 112 years ago, before you made that comment, 112 years before you even said that, in the Ottawa Citizen, November 15th, 1907, there was an article called Schools Aid White Plague, right on the front page describing how 69% of the children were dying in the Indian residential schools out west. Two-thirds of the children dead after 1 year. Is that genocide? I guess not at the time. Suddenly, it's fashionable to talk about it. If we're going to have a new nation, we've got to wipe clean this legacy, and we're going to be talking about how we do that with Amy Wolf, who will be on at the same time as Brenda, but we're going to have our focus first on Brenda. Apparently, she has to leave a bit sooner than expected. Also, to remind folks, there are, starting in Labor Day weekend, the first weekend in September, we're going to be going from west to east. Our campaign tour is starting on the West Coast, ending up on Ontario for the time of the election. There are going to be meetings, rallies with all our supporters, the people who want a republic. That's 58% of you folks out there who want a Republican candidate, all and all ties to the Crown. And so we'll be organizing for those events during August, holding them in September. That's an update. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on Brenda and Amy. Hello to both of you.
Hey, hi, Kevin.
Hi, Amy.
Now, Amy, I want you to take part in this, but Brenda, you know, you're going to go first. I know that we had a talk this week. You're willing to run. Talk a little bit about why you want to run for the Republican Party of Canada. What's your vision for the future?
Well, it's just everything's come to a head, Kev. It's not that I really want to run. It's just... if we don't at this point, we're in big trouble. It's obvious. All around the world, everywhere, all the systems are in big trouble. The CAS, the church, the government, even the UN. Peter Dalglish has been jailed in Nepal for raping boys. He was a UN official. He, I believe, got the Order of Canada or a prestigious award. So, I mean, that's happening at the UN level. The secret societies are enabling it. We have medical tyranny and people in... What's that?
Go ahead. No. I just had a bit of feedback.
Oh, okay. And we have so many people living in debt, and they can't get out of it. Like, we're all trapped at this point.
Right.
So if we don't take it upon ourselves to change this, it's just going to get worse at this point, and I think that's obvious. And so I have a lot going on in my life, and it's a crazy decision, but I have to do it. And I'm a little, you know, I'm just getting into it, so I don't have all the ins and outs just
right
yet, but I'll learn as I go.
Well, I know, Brenda, one of the things that's really, you know, that we got involved with together first, the whole issue of child trafficking within the system, the Crown system of courts and so-called child protection is openly aiding and abetting child trafficking, and the Children's Aid Society is totally unaccountable. It's this question of accountability which makes the whole system of Crown government, you know, illegitimate in my mind. It isn't just that they murdered 60,000 children in Indian schools and got away with it. They're still doing it today. You go to a reservation. I know Tyendinega is near to you. You see the ongoing systemic poverty. But you've had a direct run-in with these Crown agencies. And I know that we've talked about, like, if we're going to have a change, we need to create, as part of this campaign, alternatives in the community. So what are your thoughts on that, you know, the idea of bringing people together in common law assemblies, common law courts, as an alternative to the Crown, the corrupt Crown regime we have in Canada?
Well, at this point, it's not that difficult. It's, you know, people can act, people can make all the difference. So if we come together in our own communities and have direct action units, protect the children wherever possible and the elderly and the otherwise vulnerable, and then we all just start working together and building our own systems from there. It's not fighting the old system anymore. It's just walking away from it and doing our
right
own thing.
Well, one example of that is, you know, under international law, it says if your nation, if your government has committed genocide as being either proven or admitted, which has now happened, the Prime Minister himself admitted it, you have an obligation not to pay taxes to that government. That's in the International Criminal Court Convention. Article 25 instructs citizens not to aid and abet genocidal regimes. Well, people say, okay, but if you don't pay federal taxes, how are we going to pay for parks and things like that? The reality is federal taxes do not go towards providing services for people. That's local taxes that do that, by and large, or provincial. Federal taxes, most of them, go to paying off debts to foreign banks. Over half the debt in Canada exists because the banks and the big corporations and super rich have not paid a dime of income tax. And so we all have to foot the bill for that. So instead, here's an idea. We say no more federal taxes. We're going to keep our money in our community. We've already had town mayors in Ontario interested in the idea. You keep the money in the community. And that way we're not defying. We're just rerouting it into our own hands. What do you think of that?
I think that the most brilliant way to go, if each community is responsible for itself, then, you know, all the problems everywhere take care of themselves, like systemically. So it's just a matter of people getting together over coffee at this point and talking about the problems and then saying, what are we going to do about it? Oh, we're going to go to that meeting and we're going to support the people who are actually protecting the children and the vulnerable, because like they know that their taxes are funding this at this point. So if we can work on the people, you know, through, you know, even guilt or whatnot, that you are funding this. And if you bring it back into your own community, you can be more responsible for what you're funding. And beyond that, we could have functioning communities. You know, all the roads could be fixed and our parks could be thriving and all the things that they're taking away from us in our communities, we can actually have them back and have them thriving if we redirect the taxes and become more responsible with them.
Well, here's an example, too. I remember last year I was in Winnipeg, North Winnipeg, and the first meeting we held of People's Assembly. And only about, let's see, how many people were there? Maybe 14, 15 people showed up. But I said, look, let's start talking about this community here. What do you need? What kind of laws do you need? Let's debate them. Let's talk about a way of enforcing these laws if we passed it. If we had enough people here, we could be the power. When people got over the kind of novelty of the idea, they started talking, and it was amazing the ideas that were pouring out of people because they know the situation on the ground. They are a lot better informed than a mayor or a politician somewhere in Ottawa, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is exciting. Once we start the process, this is what our whole campaign's about. It doesn't end with marking a ballot and then going back to sleep. It's about people getting activated in their community. So if you have to do that, and you are going to do this, you're doing it now, but talk a little bit about your riding. I know the guy who's in there now, Neil Ellis, he's a Liberal, quote, representing everybody, which is a bogus term. Of course, nobody can represent anyone else. But what's this guy like? I understand you know a little bit about the guy.
Well, Neil is the MP, and I know actually a lot more about Todd Smith, the MPP. He's a conservative. I was trying to work with him to expose the child abuse in the CAS. But I do know that Neil Ellis, I believe he was working with the minister of the Presbyterian Church here in town that kicked me out for exposing child abuse. She's running a program called Reaching for Rainbows. And this rainbow stuff is becoming crazy. It's all tying into a big agenda. And
right.
Neil Ellis, I believe, said that he wanted to bring this program that's running in the church. He wants to make it a national program. Well, that program only focuses on girls. That's all they cater to is disadvantaged females, 6 to 9. So, through that, we start seeing that he's actually implementing the UN agenda,
right?
You know, for sustainable development, all this equality and whatnot for women and children.
Now,
he's definitely implementing an agenda.
Right. Now, we've talked before about how they booted you out of that church and everything, but I'm sure he's going to blanch when he sees you show up at an all candidates meeting. Hey, what do you think, Brenda?
I would imagine they all will, because they know I'm not, they know I'm valid.
Yep.
All these things that I was trying to expose, they've come to light. The executive director's been charged. The CAS, it folded, you know, it had to amalgamate. It has a new name. So all the damage control has been done, and they know that I'm valid. Right. So when I surface, they were certainly going to choke a little, I think, because, I mean, they're going to ridicule and all that.
Of course.
That's the basic strategy at first. And, well, my shoulders are broad enough after all the ridicule I've been enduring since 2000 trying to expose all this stuff. So
I really
don't care about ridicule anymore.
No, you're the perfect
I'll stand right up there and be heckled. I don't give a damn anymore.
You're, in my mind, the perfect people's candidate, Brenda.
Well, thank you.
Amy, let me ask you if you want to jump in with any comments or questions.
And it's Brenda Everall, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi, Brenda. Well, congratulations on your decision to run.
Well, thank you.
And I hear that it's a big one and it feels can feel overwhelming and that you have lots of other things going on in your life. So thank you very much for taking that step forward. I know it's a lot.
It is. But, you know, someone has to do it. And I know that I have people like you supporting me. So,
yeah. And,
it's
you
not
know
as
what?
Intimidating.
Actually, it is intimidating and it's set up that way deliberately. And you're right. Someone does have to do it. But a lot of times people don't. It really is a very difficult and challenging decision that you're making. And it really is a decision. And you really don't have to. You feel compelled to because there's a need. So if I were to jump in on Kevin's invitation, it would be if you take someone like me who has, I've had my place pulled out from under me in the system for advocating for a course requirement on Indigenous rights and title. So I've been underemployed for years, I can't help with the $10,000 that Kevin has said is needed. What are some ways that someone like me, who is also dealing with all that stuff you talk about, how can I help?
First, just being there and showing yourself and coming into the movement is help all on its own because our strength is in numbers. But, you know, beyond that, it's maybe just building a network where we can all bounce off of each other and say, hey, so-and-so needs this, or somebody could use, you know, not money, but some physical help or material items or, I don't know, but just
so what would, what
showing
would...
up at meetings.
Sure, yeah, what are three exact, like, concrete things that would be in the reach of someone who, you know, feels overwhelmed, doesn't know where to start, or maybe someone who's opted out of the entire system and hasn't voted because it doesn't represent them, so they're just starting to realize that there's actually a viable option. Like, guide us through these, like, little baby steps.
Oh, God, I don't know.
Three little baby steps.
Well, I hope Brenda and all of us answer that. And Amy, I wanted to ask you and Brenda a question, which I think might help with that.
Maybe I took it off to the side.
No, it's not off to the side.
No.
I think it's all related. But when Brenda talked about how she was railroaded out of the Presbyterian Church because, you know, the things they were doing in the residential schools never stopped. They got shifted. And that's why they came down on me so much, because they don't want people to know about this, the depth of the crime, because they realize it's carrying on today. So in terms of these churches, one of the planks in our program of the Republican Party of Canada is if we believe in a secular democracy, we got to stop giving tax exemptions and privileges to churches that slaughtered over 60,000 children and have never been held accountable one moment for any of that. Not one of the people has gone to trial, let alone jail, for this. Why should we continue to subsidize those groups? Now, when you raise that in a community, people, it hits a nerve. And I've had friends, including Katie Stokoe, who I know is listening into the show today. She was mobbed almost outside churches when she was handing out flyers on the East Coast about this stuff. And it's an example, when we talk about Canadians taking responsibility, let's start right there in people's own churches. Making accountability means not words of apology. It means bringing home the remains of those children, having war crimes trials, stopping these tax exemptions, putting the head officers on trial. This is how a country deals with its own crime, not with a lot of words and bullshit. So I wondered if you could both talk about that, because I think it's an issue that might unite some of us. What do you think?
Well, exactly. Like when, you know, that's another way of supporting each other. When we're online trying to push this stuff, I mean, the trolls are getting less and less, but if we could all start somehow supporting each other online, you know, like validating each other and just becoming more socially present online with this stuff. We've all kind of, you know, I know in the beginning I was posting everywhere that I could about all this stuff, and it just was falling on blind eyes. And so I stopped for a while, but my presence is coming back online. Like, I don't care if it gets likes or dislikes or shares or whatever, as long as people are seeing it. But if we could start validating each other when we see right. somebody else's post and that kind of stuff, that's going to go a long way at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought of that about Amy when, like, you know, one of the things that's being talked about is the organizing of symposiums in Vancouver and other places where the crime happened. So the real history of these crimes can be taught, because people can't create a new nation and start a new deal unless they know the real history. And the real history is being shoved right down the toilet, right down the memory hole, as George Orwell mm-hmm. would say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so think about, I mean, you're an expert on this in terms of your own efforts and research. So what do you think of that, Amy?
Well, I am an educator. My background is in education, and I was adopted out of my culture and raised by like a second and third generation white settler family, and I'm just starting to realize how ill-equipped they were to furnish me with an Aboriginal identity of any kind. It was an identity that was completely suppressed, and my adopted dad said, don't tell anyone who you are because no one will want to work with you or play with you. So I kind of played by that until the last 5 years when I decided to identify as Indigenous, because I thought maybe things had shifted, and I went into post-secondary to teach about these issues. And in particular, the genocide in Canada is it's a colonial genocide. It is an illegal genocide, and it is criminal. And it's being played out through the dispossession of our traditional territories and our lands. And that dispossession is, it's a stance that's maintained in the documents that are used as teaching tools by the British Columbia Teachers Federation. There's one online that was published in 2018. It's an ebook, and it's called The Hidden History.
Ripped off of my...
Pardon?
The title ripped off from my original book, which they refused to look at.
Absolutely no acknowledgement of you whatsoever, Kevin. And that document, I encourage all your readers to have a look at it. It refers to genocide as cultural. It talks about the Indian residential schools as if the issues was like sexual and corporal abuse. In the 32 pages, it lies. It says that there was maybe 6,000 children who quote-unquote perished.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it mentions Dr. Peter Bryce's report. So for any young reader who wants to actually do the math with the numbers in Peter Bryce's report, they can tell it wasn't 6,000 children. Like, it's just a blatant, ostentatious lie. And in the entire document, it doesn't once mention land.
Right. Which is
it
what it was
makes
all about.
It look like the schools were like a civilization project, and it continually refers to it as cultural genocide, and continually mentions that it was an effort of kind of in civilization. It wasn't. It was about removing us from the land, and the intent was to kill us.
Okay, Amy, if I could jump in for a minute, this is really important, because the BC Teachers Federation is always seen as a progressive part of culture. They're the ones who got the NDP elected. This cover-up of genocide and complicity crosses all party lines. The NDP are just as heavily involved in suppressing the truth as the Tories or the Liberals. It's like my friend Neil Cohen, who was in South Africa under apartheid. He said, it doesn't matter what your politics were. You were on one side, and the black Bantu stands were on the other. And the gunships would go in there and slaughter the blacks, and all the white people, regardless if they were left, right, center, they were sitting in their nice homes untouched. Canada reminds me of that, right? Doesn't matter what people's politics are. When it comes to genocide, they all tell the lie. And they all combine in shutting down our voice, right?
That's right.
Totally. And I actually came across an interesting document a couple weeks ago online. It's preserved by the Canadian government, ironically. But it was called Conquest by Law. And it was created by Natives. And it was updated throughout the decades. And it talks about their laws and the way they governed themselves before the settlers came here and how they dealt with it throughout the settler population. So I urge readers to try and find that. It's Conquest by Law. Quite a good read.
That's good. And also, you know, one of the things, and this is why I think, I know in my campaign, and I'm sure in yours, Brenda, we're going to be integrating this whole thing of genocide into our campaign, saying, if you really want to deal with the legacy of genocide, we got to start right in our own backyard and look in the mirror and say, how are we complicit? It's got to start in the classroom, raise the new generation with the truth. And I tell you, you know, when I tried to get the Toronto School Board was going to start publishing my stuff as part of the grade 11 and 12 curriculum 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then the Ontario government stepped in and said, you're not going to touch this, any of it, any reference to a death. It's like what you said, Amy. They use the word perish. Like you said, it's like rotten fruit, right? It's they never use the word killed or died. It's all language
murdered.
To soften the impact and the truth, right?
And that same language is being used with the all the sexual abuse on children and stuff. They're using lingo now like underage women instead of children.
Oh, God.
So, you know, all this newspeak. And it's, you know, conditioning us to think less of the crime. So.
Right. Well, it's the word pedophile. It means friend of children in Greek.
Oh,
brainwashing.
Well, most of them.
Let's talk. Brenda, how much time do you have left with us? Do you have to go sooner?
Things are amping up inside here. I might have 5 or 10 more minutes.
Okay. So why don't you say anything you need to say right now before you have to leave? Anything else you want to kick in right now, you know, with what's being said?
Just, you know, nobody's a hero in this movement at all. We're all just normal people trying to find a way. Nobody has the answer. Like you said the other day, Kev, there's no template for changing the world. Mm-hmm. We all just got to plug away and try to judge less and hate less and love more and see beyond, you know, what's right in front of us. And just come together as a community and start making the people in our communities feel good again any way we can. So many people are sick and impoverished. And they're aware of the issues now. So many people know what's going on. They just don't know where to go. So here we are. We're the ones building this, and if you build it, apparently they will come.
Well, all we have to do, I saw that in North Winnipeg, you just call a meeting every week. Say, we're going to be here every Monday, People's Assembly. It'll start small, but it'll grow. We're the alternative. You build a, you know what somebody once said, you build a new society in the shell of the old as the old one collapses. And we do that. We got to create the alternative. Otherwise, the energy gets getting sucked right back into the system. And
now is the time. If we don't do it now, we're using.
Yep.
So, yeah, and I mean, the blueprint's right there. That's not just saying it. Like, the Agenda 2030 is a real thing. We have till 2030, and we're all slaves. Like, we're already slaves, but we won't be able to get out of that system.
I think that's what people have to realize. We're facing extermination.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Hong Kong right now, they're protesting like crazy because of all the facial recognition. New World Order is already installed in China. They have a good citizen program running where they can't leave their house without facial recognition identifying them, and they get demerit points all day long, and they're rated as citizens, and it's being implemented now in Hong Kong, and they're protesting it huge because they know once we go under this system, we're not getting out of it.
Well, part of the 2030 agenda is the what they call sustainable development, is urbanize the whole world's population to control everyone. And we in Canada are in a position, in Canada, where we can counter that. Think of the vast territories. I often said to Native people I work with, just stand on your own land, hold on to your land. That's why the Mohawks fight to the death over the land, the little land left to them, you know, because the future of all of us is at stake. And so, you know, this is a matter of survival. And you often say to people, there's a difference between doing something out of a good intention and doing something because your life depends on it. Because when you know your life depends on it, you don't stop. You don't have a half measure. You don't dabble in something. And
well, and that's where I'm at, Kev. I've gone through all the courts and the tribunals, and I found out firsthand that there is no justice in Canada. There's no accountability. So the illusion that we have that we can chase that when something does happen to us, it's an illusion. And I've experienced it firsthand. I've gone right to the end for accountability, and there is none. If we don't act now, we're euchred. That's all I know. So, you know, I got to do this.
Yep. That's powerful. You know, that's all you have to do, Brenda, is talk like that in front of the mics. And the people will be on board because they all know it's true. They all have the same experience. But all they look at when they hear politics is bullshit artists who are all in the on the public trough who have an interest in the lie, right? We don't.
Yeah. Like, I can't even go to those meetings and hear the rhetoric and the bullshit anymore because it's just so typical.
Yep.
So it's just got to change. That's the bottom line. It doesn't matter who's awake to it. The ones who are awake, we know our numbers are small, but we can do it.
And I know you wanted us to mention, too, there have been a couple of attempts to hold meetings around Picton, and they haven't happened yet. There's a tendency to blame we, the organizers. People say, hey, how come you didn't pull this off? What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I know I say to people, it's up to you guys to show up, right? That's why it didn't happen. You didn't show up, right?
And I'm also finding that after the event, people will approach me and say, well, I didn't come out because, you know, and there's several reasons, but it boils down to fear. A lot of people don't want to be the first five people at a meeting because chances are they're going to be targeted. They've seen what happened to me, to you, to Amy, to, you know, they don't want to be those people. So they want to come to the meeting when there's 20 people there, not when they're the first one or two or three, you know.
Right. So it's getting that critical mass. It's the hardest thing. They often say getting 2-3 people together is harder than getting 20 or 200 together. Because once a momentum starts, people join up. And this is the critical point we're at right now. And everyone listening needs to know this. We're at a critical moment now. We've got to reach that minimal critical mass. And so in any community we work in, we try to find a core group of 3 to 5 people willing to do this work consistently. Whether it's the educational work, like we were talking about, Amy, getting the curriculum changed, fighting to protect our children, any campaign in our community, we've got to unite on this now and build those core groups. So otherwise, this is just talk, right?
So I do have to get going here, unfortunately.
Okay.
But I wanted to turn that around to Amy, that if there's anything I can do to help you, if we could do any kind of campaign to get you a job, you know, like some accountability, like I'm a letter writer, that's what I do. So if there's anything I can do or get a campaign going to get you some support, just send an email and we'll see what we can do.
I sure appreciate that. Thank you, Brenda, and all the best to you on with your campaign. And thank you for everything you said today. It's very powerful, very true, and you are right.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for coming on today. We need more people like you, for sure, willing to take a stand and suffer the consequences. So thank you, too, for all that you're doing, and thank you,
Kevin,
and I will talk to you all later.
Okay,
you sure will. Thanks, sister. Love you.
Take care.
I'll talk to you later.
Love you. Okay,
bye.
Brenda Everill, she's running in Bay of Quinte, that's spelled Quinte, Bay of Quinte, that's southern part of Ontario, North Shore Lake, Ontario. And guess what? That's where Sir John A. Macdonald, the first prime minister and a lobbyist for the Canadian Pacific Railway, no accident, that connection, that's where his riding was. So what better place to raise the flag of the Republic than in the kind of landmark of Tory Canada? So folks in that area, get on board. Write to Republic of Canada, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofcanada@gmail.com if you want to help out with Brenda Everill's campaign. We'll hear more about that. And Amy, I've had a listener write in some questions. Okay, if you don't mind. This is about the General Synod of the Anglican Church that happened in Vancouver. Fred Hiltz, who's a retiring primate who personally helped destroy documents about the mush hole, they call it, the Mohawk Brantford Anglican School, where so many children died. He ordered the destruction of documents about the murder of children in that school. The Synod talked openly whereby Hiltz apologized to natives for the spiritual harm being done to them in the form of forbidding the pipes, stopping of drums, hiding masks, destroying totems, silencing the songs, etc. The writer says, such horseshit, bring this up with Amy. He also talked about acknowledging intergenerational trauma, confessed the church's sin in robbing the native children and youth. He said, I'm very sorry, we're so full of ourselves, we're ignorant, we're insensitive, we offended you, and we offended God, unquote. Like, he makes it sound like they had, you know, it's more the mild talk around genocide, like, oh, I'm really sorry now that we treated you like we didn't treat you with respect. No, you killed children and threw them in ditches. You made them run behind cars in chains. You flogged them to death at the Anglican school in Lytton, the St. George's school there. I had a former employee said they would flog children to death and put them in the stocks. This is not about being insensitive. It's about mass murder. So this mind fog these people create, I mean, this is exactly what the problem is. So anyway, that's a comment somebody sent to you.
Oh, thank you. And it's true that spiritual apology was ludicrous, and it happened on the heels of your call to make a citizen's arrest at the church when he was speaking. Is that not right?
Exactly right. As a matter of fact, there were people there that same week trying to do it. And, of course, their resources were limited. They were blocked. There was massive security, cops, everything. But obviously, they knew the threat was there. He knows there's been an arrest warrant out for him, you know, since the time of the tribunal in Europe in 2013. And so naturally, he has to try to backpedal and make himself look good, right? But it's definitely, like you say, in response to what we do.
I thought that was phenomenal because I have started following your work regularly very recently. So I was aware in the weeks before that spiritual apology was on the news. I was aware of the work that you were doing and the call out for the citizen's arrest at the Anglican Church. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly on CBC News with no background, the Anglican Church seems to spontaneously apologize for spiritual harm. But there's no context, there's no reason for this. And when we wake up, we start to realize that we really are living in a state as we're living in a fascist regime. And it's a little bit like waking up on the Truman Show when Truman realized that he was in a program and his entire reality was being constructed.
Yep.
It's like we're in a program. So my question is, when we're listening to the news, does anybody care to ask why at that time the Anglican Church suddenly makes this bizarre statement that they spiritually harmed children
in
residential schools?
No, because no one hears the real truth of what's going on. The censorship in Canada is unbelievably effective, and you know that from your own experience, how easily this stuff can be shut off, people turn away. Partly it's the way Canadians are. The C word, controversy, and people back off, right? So people do it to themselves. They self-censor all the time. That's the best kind there is, because then everyone can see, oh, no, look, there's no dictator here. We're policing ourselves, like good Canadians, right? But that's the problem, Amy. The first question is getting the truth out there. And that's why your work is so important. And these upcoming symposium, I know that I don't want to give the details about it, but there is something being planned in Vancouver where we're going to start getting the truth out in a more effective way academically and in those circles. So do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because it's the way we counter these lies, right?
Yes, right. So where do I start? Let's start with K-12 and the Vancouver School Board. So the district office of the Vancouver School Board is close to where I live. It's at like West Broadway around Burrard Street in Vancouver. And in the last month, three polls were put up. They were carved by a person named Will Acton and his family and the superintendent of the Vancouver School Board got up on the stage and said, well, we acknowledge that we're on the traditional territory. She didn't say the word unceded. And then she gave the rhetoric that is in this ridiculous ebook that's been posted online as well, Hidden History, and that's province-wide for the entire province to use, not just Vancouver School Board. And she talks about the culture. She doesn't say anything about a genocide. She talks just about the residential school. She doesn't talk about reserves. She doesn't talk about the child welfare system and the fact that the child welfare system is arguably taking like three times more children than we're taking.
Oh yeah, that's absolutely. And they don't. The they have a separate system of law too. If you're a native family on welfare, your child can be seized at any time without a warrant, with nothing. There's
that's
two standards,
right.
So, like in any system of genocide: one for natives, one for others.
So the same justification that the original one was that the Indigenous parents are savages, the very same thing is happening where we're still not capable of raising our children properly.
And, you know, I also checked, Amy, St. Paul's Hospital, where our friend William Coombs was murdered, the witness to the abduction of Native children by Queen Elizabeth, he died from arsenic poisoning. The nurse, Chloe Kirker, went on our show to describe all of the symptoms that she saw. He was murdered in St. Paul's Hospital. That's exactly where the children were taken routinely from the residential schools and killed, and fake death certificates issued. There was even a report done about that, and when people tried to surface that report, they were arrested. I mean, this is a whole story in itself, but as you're talking, it's like there's this surface reality that everybody moves in, but you just scratch the surface, and there's this police state underneath it. And, you know, how do we – I think the reason I asked you this is how do we get this more into – the classrooms where, like, I know in grade 11 and 12, you got First Nation studies in BC, right? And same old story. Individual teachers love my book, Murder by Decree. They say, so what if there's descriptions of sterilizations and murders? Kids see that on TV anyway. This is real. They've got to learn about it. And then the local trustee or whoever will intervene and stop the use of that material by the teacher. It happens time and again. So what, as an educator, how is the best way to counter this, do you think?
That's a good question, Kevin. So I am an educator that paid, in terms of professional language, I paid the ultimate price with my position and with my profession. But in a sense also, now that I'm like Truman and I went out on that rough sea and I found that I'm on a stage, I'm in a show, and I broke through what looks like a sky, right? Have you seen the show where he hits the end? So I did that. So now I realize, like, it was never what I thought it was anyway. I really sympathize with teachers, and what I found a way to continue to survive as someone who's an Indigenous in the colony, and I'm using online technology. I'm using a digital platform, and I just posted my new company. It's called PerceptionWork.com, and what I'm doing is I'm creating ebooks, which are accessible, inexpensive, and easy for teachers to purchase and will come with a teacher guide. Ebooks that I'm creating on an independent platform. So that means they're not created with strings attached funding, and they're also not proprietary stories. Like, they're not traditional myths. Like, they're not the property of a nation. And they're not. Also, I don't rely on approval, although I workshop the one story that's up there. It's called My Name is Celestine. Well, it's coming in the fall for purchase. But I've workshopped it extensively with the nations and with the school board. But ultimately, it's not up for ultimate approval to be posted for purchase by the teachers, by any one of the nations or the school boards.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that that's an independent platform and that it belongs to me and that I found a way to do that, that may be part of the way forward.
That's an excellent beginning. That's exactly what we need to do. It's like
and teachers can choose to purchase the book and to use it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what happens to them after that? I don't know. I am in a sympathetic position with what each one of them may individually face, and even workshopping My Name is Celestine at Henry Hudson Elementary School, there was such division in the Vancouver School Board, like the upper echelons of the administration, the person who supported it and ended up moving it forward. I said to this person, I won't even reveal their gender, I'm like, you do realize that if you support me in this story, doors may start to close on you in ways that you couldn't have imagined.
Right.
And they chose to do it anyway.
Well, that's part of their education. Like, you need the best education is a black eye, as they say, right? And then you wake up to the nature of the system. And, you know, we naturally want to protect people, but that maybe that's not always the best thing to do, you know. In this case, people have got to learn the brutal nature of what we're living in. I mean, just, as you know, you go to any reservation, you go down to Hastings Street, you see the ongoing genocide. And one thing I want to mention, too, is that we are part of the campaign is we have been people have been asking for years for me to do the sequel documentary to Unrepentant, which really kicked this whole thing off. When Gary Morasty, a member of Parliament, watched our documentary, he got up the next day in Parliament and asked, when are the children going to be brought home for burial? That kicked off the TRC. That started everything back in 2008. Well, people say, look, you need to do a sequel because look at everything that's happened since 2008, including in Rome, forcing the Pope to resign. It's all connected, right? So we want to shoot this on the ground, and you're somebody who I want to interview for this because you're a living example of the nature of Canada about its own crimes and an alternative that could arise. So, I mean, these are the kinds of projects we need to continue connecting on, right?
Right. Right, and about Brenda, she's talking about platforms and grassroots and having coffee and communities talking. There's also, and when I was in despair, you mentioned to me that there is hope that genocide, the word has been used by our Prime Minister, and the Murdered and Missing Indigenous Girls and Women Inquiry did, like it is, it is growing, like they're not succeeding at burying us. And there are some books that are coming out in the last year that are really groundbreaking and incredibly have potential to forward this truth. And I wanted to highlight the book published in 2018 by Tamara Starblanket. It's called Suffer the Little Children, Genocide, Indigenous Nations, and the Canadian State. And it's a tremendously well-researched, accurately documented, and the description of what happened is it's called The Horror, Canada's Forced Transfer of Indigenous Children in Chapter 2. It's not, she doesn't mince the truth, but she also makes a wonderful, wonderfully argued legal case for why this is actually genocide. So for anybody who wonders, could this have really happened? No, this can't be true, or this must be an exaggeration, or this must be some people who are, you know, a little off of center for their own personal reasons. It's books like this, and also books like yours, but it's creating like those connections and a family of literature that can't be brushed off as easily.
Okay,
hopefully.
Well, you know what? I this is a very important topic, but I want to, it's not a disagreement. I want to show another aspect of light on what you're saying, okay? When Trudeau stands up in Parliament and says it was genocide, it's not, from their point of view, it's like their word use of the word apology. Apology has two meanings in English. It can mean I'm sorry. It can mean I was justified in what I did and apologetic. The system uses words one way. We use them another. Genocide has lost its meaning now if the Prime Minister can talk about it, right? It's an abstraction, and it's designed to co-opt and keep, you know, the centrifugal force. I can never figure this out. Is centrifugal inward or outward? Centripetal is outward, isn't it? You're the educator.
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
Centrifugal, I think, is inward. That's what power does. It pulls everything into itself. It says, see, Prime Minister is progressive now. He's talking about genocide. In fact, it's a containment word. what we need to do is break out all the time. Have people turn off the TV, turn off the CBC, ignore Trudeau. We take back in our communities the truth, and that means digging up the graves. It means stopping the child trafficking now, including that which involves the Prime Minister, because he's directly implicated with the Chinese companies doing it. That's why he's using the word genocide now, because he's got to cover his own ass. This is a whole story we're going to do a program on, but he is directly complicit with some of these Chinese liquid natural gas companies that are involved in organ trafficking in northern BC. We've got that from journalists and cops on the ground. And anyway, so he needs politically to make himself look good these days. And there's a tendency to go, oh, look, the system's coming around to us. That's kind of wishful thinking. It's designed to get rid of, because just as they're doing that, they're also silencing people like you and me all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't mean to kind of counter you on that, but I'm just giving another kind of, if you know what I'm saying with this.
So, what did I mean to say? Is it helpful at all that the murdered and missing Indigenous girls and women inquiry came out with the ruling that it's genocide?
Helpful if we take the ball and run with it on our terms. Not helpful if we say, oh, good, it's been acknowledged now. We can all go back to sleep, keep paying our taxes, because it'll just keep carrying on. It's designed to do that. It's happening as we speak. It's happening as we speak at the very hands of the people who wrote that report, who censored it. What came out was that the missing murdered women's inquiry was not allowed to mention the RCMP's complicity in the murder of Native women. They weren't allowed to even go there. Like the TRC, they weren't allowed to take down as evidence anything about the murder of a child in a residential school. Totally whitewashed again. Because the Human Rights Watch in New York documented how the RCMP were trafficking and murdering Aboriginal women. Never mentioned in the MMWI inquiry, right? So
right.
Controlled. And so anyway, I didn't mean to come down on you like a ton of bricks there, Amy, but
not at all. And I'm realizing that as someone who was adopted into the system,
yep.
I was tremendously impacted by that. And I'm also, and this is very real as well, is that so many of us are in a process of deconditioning our thinking, and it's very easy to go along. It's very easy to kind of slip back into that language or that way of thinking.
Oh, like the use our Prime Minister or our Indians. It's an example of it right there. We use it because we've been conditioned to use it, but we've got to reclaim our language, which means critical thinking, as you know, as an educator. Mm-hmm. Looking at the meaning of these words, and we need to put our own meaning on them.
It also goes so deeply, though, because we're talking about Indigenous children being taken from their homes. And I just wanted to look at, it's page 133 in Tamara Starblanket's book, and she talks about how the child welfare system is even worse than the residential school system.
Definitely.
Because unlike the children who had each other to comfort one another in the boarding schools, a child in the child welfare system is isolated and completely alone.
And they're 400 times more likely to be abused in a foster home or in an alternative system than their own family. And that's never mentioned.
So that's me. So I also probably, like, how do you break those identifications when, you know, your upbringing was dependent on identifying with that?
Amy, you know what? I wanted you to hold that thought because we've run out of time. I just looked at the clock. We've got 3 minutes. We've got to introduce the song. But could you hold on to that thought? I'd love to have you again next week because I feel you need more time to go into this. And we're having a great discussion here, and I'm sorry we've run out of time again. But please come back next week. We'll carry this on.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Amy, thank you for everything and your witness.
Thank you for your work. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Okay, sister.
Okay, bye.
Soon. It was Amy Wolf from the West Coast, a fiery, I think, truthful, like all truthful women, very fiery. Our closing song is dedicated to both our guests today and to all of you women out there who are helping us reclaim ourselves, reclaiming our children, starting with that fundamental task. You know, I did a count, and of the let me count them. There were 8 people this week who volunteered to help me personally in the campaign. 7 of them are women. And that tells you something right there. And this is dedicated to all the women out there, women warriors. It's a song written by Joe Hill, who was a labor organizer, the industrial workers of the world, shot in 1913 by the copper bosses in Colorado for leading strikes. He wrote a song called Rebel Girl, and that's for all of you out there. And before we hear that, I want to remind you folks to get involved now in everything we're talking about doing. You can write to republicofkanata@gmail.com, follow the work murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates. We need your contributions materially as well. There's in the latest posting there on that site, our time is now. You can see the information there about how you can financially donate. We need to raise $10,000. It's only going to come from you folks. That keeps us honest, that we're a people-fueled movement, but it also means we're dependent on you to move beyond nice thoughts and words to action. That's one of the ways you can do it. You can write to me personally, thecommonland@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with Amy Wolf again and with much more updates on our campaign and the mounting movement to reclaim our minds, our sovereignty, our land. This is Rebel Girl coming to you next. And this is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. Stay strong, stay clear.